show that looks at Kansas City baseball's past.
It's a place where I met my wife and my three children were born. And to this day, I'm so proud to call KC home.
A show that looks at Kansas City baseball's present.
Alex with a basket catch. They're going to send the runner. His throw, a great one! Alex Gordon with a tremendous Gold Glove play.
And a show that looks at Kansas City baseball's future.
With the fifth selection of the 2012 first-year player draft, the Kansas City Royals select Kyle Zimmer.
This is the Kansas City Baseball Vault.
Welcome into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I'm Troy Olson. I'm joined by Michael Engel as we go old school and original style around here on the Kansas City Baseball Vault and take it back to when it was just the two of us. Mike, how are you doing this morning?
I am cold, and I don't like it.
Well, you know what? I'd rather take the cold than that ungodly heat that we had for a few months there.
See, that's what I... Every time it hits summer and it's 125 degrees out, I always say, man, I can't wait till winter. And then, yeah, just kind of out of nowhere. It was like 25 degrees was the low, and that sucks. I don't like it. I would take 75 right now. That'd be fantastic.
So, as you all know, we do the show via Google Hangouts now, and it has created some issues throughout time, and you've noticed we've been a little lacking on our high-end guests, but we definitely didn't let down last week as we had on, I think, the people that listen to our show, people that you should care about, and that's some of the best bloggers in Kansas City. With that, we had both the Jeffs, and of course Mike and myself, and then we had D.B. Lesky, and we had invited a couple of others, but they weren't able to make it. And we'll do more of that kind of thing because it's easy, and I think it's very good information to get from those people in a different view. I joked with Lesky that it just really lacked any sort of conflict. We all seemed to be on the same page, and so he joked that he should have. He thought about just throwing something out there just to create, you know, kind of tension or whatever, but decided against it. And
it's not like all Royals in all, fans, I think it was very it's not like Royals fans agree on everything. I mean, you can just spend 5 minutes on Twitter and realize that's not the case, but I think a lot of us approach, you know, baseball and watching and following the team in the same way. And so, yeah, you are going to have some consensus at times. But I think there's little subtle differences in the way people kind of see things. And I think that's kind of where it comes into play. But, yeah, last week was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun. Everybody I talked to that was on the show and then people that listened did enjoy it. And so we'll try to do more of that in the future. I really like the guys that we had on, Jeff Parker and Lesky. They are definitely two of my favorites. Why do I feel like I'm forgetting somebody? I'm not forgetting anybody, am I?
We had Matt Whitener from I-70.
Oh, that's right. On. That's who I'm forgetting. Matt Whitener was on for the first half of the show. I do apologize, Matt.
Yep.
He's a Cardinals fan. Or, I'm sorry, he's a Royals fan out of St. Louis. Kind of a rarity. But he's writing for I-70 Baseball, so go check them out as well. D.B. Lesky, of course, of Pine Tar Press. And Jeff's kind of a free agent, as we talked about at the end of the show. He's apparently going to be writing for everybody. So
no, not anymore.
Is it official?
It's official. He is on Kings of Kauffman now. He's still going to do shorter pieces at royallyspeaking.com, but his bigger things are going to be at Kings of Kauffman. His first one's up, and it's really good.
Well, hopefully we can steal some non-sports articles for Echo as well, but that's not going to make Lesky too happy, that's for sure.
No.
So,
sorry, Dave.
that's awesome, though. Good pull by you, Mike, because he's fantastic. He's one of my favorite.
Jeff's great. He's been around for like 5 years in the blogosphere. So I've been after him for like a year and a half. just every other month, every third month, just like, hey, how you feeling? Where you at? So I'm glad he joined up. And if he hadn't, you know, that's fine. He still produces really good stuff. But yeah, it was a good get.
Jeff is somebody that I do consider a friend. He's been around for a while, and like I said, he helped roller derby in St. Joe, and that's very special to me. So we were going to have on Dave Darby to talk a little bit about his experiences with Kevin Seitzer in spring training, because we're going to talk about Kevin Seitzer here in a little bit. We were also going to have on Neil Morehouse, who is a Carne Cabeza, the masked super fan from Baltimore, because we were talking this morning about how exciting Baltimore was yesterday and how the whole city was in love with with what was going on, and I think it would have been interesting to hear how Baltimore was, because I think that if the day happens, that's going to be how KC's going to be. I think we're really lacking in there. But so neither of them were able to get their computers to work appropriately, and again, that's the disadvantage of doing a show where you're so dependent on the computer. But we're working on some details. We have some things coming up, and I do plan, like I've said, this offseason we will have Jason Parks. I have phone numbers for Brian Pena and Danny Duffy, and I do plan on getting them on one way or another, if it's via just a recorded phone call, or if we get some other things worked out, some add-ons that I have found for what we're doing, we will get that all figured out, and we will make that work for you. And we still hope to have the I'm going to steal one from Fantasy Focus here, the definitive Kevin Goldstein interview this offseason, and do nothing but talk about music and politics and everything that's not sports, because if you haven't heard, Kevin Goldstein, formerly of Baseball Prospectus, cannot write or talk about baseball anymore because he's now one of the head scouts for the Houston Astros, and he's kind of important down there, and they don't like their scouts talking about baseball in the open air, so yep. He won't be talking any baseball with us anytime soon, which is really unfortunate, actually.
Yeah, I think it'd be fun, though, to, you know, just, he's more than just baseball. So
it's something we've wanted to do. Yeah. It's something we've wanted to do for over a year, so yep. So I really hope to make that happen. Let's see, what else is going on? Oh, yeah, the baseball season ended.
Oh, yeah, there's that minor detail, yeah, the Always tough this time of year because the Royals are never doing anything. So we're just kind of left watching other teams celebrate. And I don't know. It really sucks. It was kind of merciful in a way because the Royals really were not playing well in the last 2 weeks of the season.
Not since we beat up the White Sox.
No. I mean, they just absolutely fell apart against Detroit. Just terrible.
Didn't look good against Cleveland.
No, and it just, you know, it's kind of one of those things, you know, Hosmer was hurt, Moustakas was hurt, you know, neither of them played the last three games. Hosmer missed, you know, what, six or so. Crappy year.
Let's stay right there and talk about an article wrote by Dick Cagle and Vinny Duber up on the MLB site. You can find it at royals.com. But they actually talked about exactly that. Moustakas and Hosmer, at the time, it said may be out. Of course, you know that Hosmer had a sore left groin. And yeah, I think
– you're getting it backwards. Moustakas had a groin.
That's
Hosmer
right,
has a slight tear in his right arm, in his right shoulder. But it's not his throwing arm, so it's not considered serious. It's one of those things. It's not – hurt to the extent that they need to do surgery. It's just going to take rest, which that's fine. They have plenty of time before any of the conditioning programs start up, so I don't think it's going to be an issue going forward.
And I will say this, I don't know if it'll happen, but I am going to reach out to Stefania Bell about that injury and see if I can get her to come on or even do a phone interview of Stefania Bell of ESPN.
Oh, I guess she would.
I think that would be fantastic. And
she's a KU alum, too.
Oh, that's right. So that could be more freaking Jayhawks on this show because we don't have enough.
Nope. Can never have enough.
Mike, I'm sure you're probably paying closer attention to it than I am. I don't have Twitter up right now to inform me of the score because who needs ESPN.com when you have Twitter? But nope. Let me know what's going on with KU and K-State as it goes on. I know Weiss has broken out his Xbox controller and is going for it every down.
Yeah, I
Put some headphones on, Neil. We're going to have to wait a second because everything we say is going to echo. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will be right back on the other side.
Kelly's Westport. It's the place where you buy beer. This guy came into the bar the other day and was telling me that they had friends in town and went down to that fancy bar district downtown. They went to one of those swanky no-ball cap bars and ordered a beer. Now, this wasn't one of those imported beers, wasn't even one of those microbrew deals. This bartender rang up the tab, and he wanted $27 for three dadgum beers. $27 for some beers. That isn't right. That isn't fair. So he took them down to see us. We got them some nice big beers for half that price. Even had one of the ladies find a fella there. Got him some pizza. Listen, don't fall victim to those overpriced, no ball cap bars down there. You might as well take your money and throw it in the trash. Kelly's Westport. It's the place where you buy beer. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Hi, I'm a woman, and I listen to Bugcast Podcast.
Hola, soy una mujer. Yo oigo a Bugcast and Bugcast.
And when I do, it makes me hornier than a hoot owl at midnight.
Cuando pensar de eso, toda la noche, como jodiendo a chingazos.
If you think Zac Efron's sexy, you haven't seen anything yet.
Si piensas de Zac Efron, es guapo, no ha mirado nada todavía.
Look out, David Beckham. You're not the only one with just your underwear on.
Cuidado, David Beckham. Tú eres el único que no tienes calzones también.
Bugcast makes me feel so good. Jealous much?
Me siento muy bien con Bugcast. Me hacen celosos.
Listen to a new episode of Bugcast, released every Monday.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. I am Troy Olson, joined, of course, by my partner, Mike Engel. And we're joined in the middle screen down there. If you're watching at youtube.com/RoyalManReport, you can see Neil Morehouse, who is the alter ego of Carne Cabeza. So, the Luchadorial, as you may remember, he was on our show back when we were in the old man cave and was walking around his bar and everything. But we're going to stop talking about the Royals for a second, and we're going to jump over and actually talk about the Orioles for a second and the environment that was yesterday. Tell us, Neil, what it was like to experience, not only as a fan, but as a super fan and everything else. What was it like in the city of Baltimore during that game?
I have not seen tension like this ever. I mean, 97, I was, 17, 16 years old, so I didn't have the experience of going to bars or anything like that. The whole city last night, you could feel the tension. Like, everybody was nervous, everybody was tense. We were all on our seat the whole game. Like, it was unreal, because with the Ravens, we're there a lot. But with the Orioles, we don't know when the next time this will happen. You know, this might not ever happen, you know, for another 15 years. So we were on edge, for sure.
I have to punch you in the face now, though, because you reminded us that at least Baltimore has one good sports team. Because Kansas City doesn't even have that.
You know the Ravens are coming there.
Yeah. Oh, I know. They're going to be here tomorrow. I was going to go to the game for my birthday because my birthday is Monday, and I just don't want to go watch that. It's just going to be ugly. Or the Chiefs are going to surprise everybody and actually win a game again.
Charles is pretty good. I mean, we have a halfway decent run defense, but that's about it. You know, our passing defense is terrible this year.
But I promise people we won't talk football on this show, so we'll stay on baseball here. So, no, that's quite all right. So tell us about, as a fan of a team that hasn't been good in a while, fan of the Orioles, but it's always been a team that has spent some money, so it's kind of different than Kansas City where we don't spend any money. But in Baltimore, they will spend a little bit of money. What has it been like? What was it like? Have you seen a lot more Orioles gear than Ravens gear this week? What's it been like in Baltimore this last week or so?
It is the weirdest thing. It is absolutely strange to see so much orange. Like, even at the beginning of the season, all the moves we made were just seemed terrible. But in hindsight, how wrong we were, you know. And throughout the year, you could see it progressively pick up as far as the fans buying stuff. Like, there was at least a third of the people in the bar last night that had postseason gear. I mean, we're talking wild card game postseason. We could have lost, and they'd have had a hat that said postseason.
Hey, but you were in the postseason. That's all that matters. Right now, I know Mike and I, we would have taken that game so quick. We'd have been out there.
I'd be fine with 500. I mean, let's be honest. Step one, 500. Step two is postseason.
That's what we were talking about, you know, at the beginning of the year, just get to 500. And then the whole season, you're like, all right, is this for real? And then the end of the season, is this for real still? And then we lose like Texas did, And just to see him pull it out was amazing. It is absolutely amazing.
So take us through yesterday. Just kind of take us through the day. Like, what was the day? Obviously, you didn't go to Texas last night to watch the game with the Rangers, and unfortunately, it wasn't a home game for the Orioles. But tell me, like, take me through what it was like. Where did you watch the game at? What was the atmosphere like for yesterday?
I worked my 9 to 5, and the whole day all I could think about was baseball. I was off all week, so Friday was the first day of work of the week, just so I didn't take off the whole week. And all I could do during work was think about baseball. It was, and I can't even remember ever being like that. So I got no work done, of course. I got home and, you know, got ready for the bar. By the time I got to the bar at about 6 o'clock, there was no seats available, which is not typical for that bar or any bar, you know, at that time. Like, everybody was there ready to watch the game. They already had the National League Wild Card game on. People were already getting into that. And the whole night, it was just, I had to get drunk. I had to get drunk. That's all I kept saying. I can't have a heart attack in the middle of a bar, you know, just being so nervous. I was like, I just started pounding beers, doing shots, and by the time the game started, I was feeling so tense but so drunk at the same time. It was the weirdest. It was just strange.
So the game goes on, and I didn't get it. I'll be honest with you. I don't even know what the final score is. I just know the Orioles won. I call high school football on Friday nights, and Mike, go ahead.
It was 5-1.
5-1.
Okay, and I know that that Texas didn't play well and what have you, but was there, throughout the course of the game, while it was going on, was there ever a point when you really went, before the final out, obviously, where you really went, this is our game, we're going to have a home game for the Orioles in Baltimore in the playoffs? Was there a thought that went through your mind?
It fleeted through my mind when we scored the first run of the game. I was like, they looked unstoppable, and then we got two more outs, and it was done. The rest of the game, I just wanted it to be over. We had the lead, you know. Once we got the lead again, we had it, and I was just like, can't the game just end now? Because it didn't sink in until after the game was over. You know, I was like, we're going home.
Neil, we're going to have to live vicariously through you as long as the Orioles stay alive. And what a World Series it would be if Baltimore plays Washington and you guys can be so close to that. And hopefully you can afford the thousands of dollars that it would cost to go to all potentially 7 games of the World Series. But let's hope you get there. We're going to go ahead and let you go, but we're going to check in with you every week that you're available through this process until the Orioles are eliminated, if that's cool with you.
It's fine with me. I'll put on the mask next time.
You're quite all right. Now, you probably don't know this unless you've been following my Twitter, but I actually retired my outfit for a while at least because I'm unhappy with what's going on with Kansas City and what have you. But I will tell you this: if you ever make it to Kansas City or I ever make it to Baltimore, I'll bring it back out just for a little Luchadorial and Casey Royal Man fun. So
that would be fun.
So we'll have that fun. But we're gonna live vicariously through you this next couple of weeks. Hopefully a lot longer than even you expect, so that you guys can take it all the way to the end. And I would love to see the Orioles win the championship because we know you as a super fan would love it, and we'd love to see that whole thing as the process goes on. But we're gonna let you go for now,
right.
And we'll hopefully talk to you next week about more winning.
Yes. Hey. Feel free to join our bandwagon.
Take it easy, Neil. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye.
A little bit of background noise there from Neil. We're going to have to work with him on that and see if we can get a little quieter room for him. He was having some troubles with the computer, so I know it might have been a last-second thing. So I think it'll be fun to watch how Baltimore reacts. I think it's going to be kind of very similar to how Kansas City's going
to
be.
I think it'd be interesting to see, like, let's say Baltimore and Oakland get to the ALCS, and then somebody like the Reds end up in the World Series. Those are a lot of teams that recently have gone through rebuilding processes, smaller markets in some cases. You know, interesting to kind of see how they are there and how their teams are constructed in relation to what the Royals have done and are doing and are planning to do, because you know that's what you got. That's what you want to do. The point is to get to the postseason and give yourself a chance to win the World Championship. And you know the Royals have been terrible at even getting to the approach to that. So, you know, I think that's interesting. I think it would be great to see that with the Yankees missing out and Cardinals missing out. I think that'd be awesome.
Well, and I think the ultimate for the baseball fan, not for TV, because it'll be horrible for TV, I'm sure, but for the baseball fan, I think the best setup of the ALCS and NLCS would be the Nationals versus the Reds and the A's versus the O's, just because they're teams that nobody really expected to be there a minute ago, you know, and now here they are. So it'll be interesting to see what goes on. But let's take another very quick break here. Obviously, we had to take our first one kind of abruptly to get his sound in order. But we'll be right back on the other side. We're going to finish talking about what we started with, and then we've got plenty more to talk about today before we get out of here, and trying to keep this show a little concise and not super long today. So we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
We saw two or three different replays. It was a bang-bang play at first, yet the replays show rather conclusively that the Royals got a tremendous, gigantic break.
The Vault.
Hey, it's Ben for Kelly's Westport Inn. Do high gas prices got you down? Well, don't worry about it. Hop on the bus to Kelly's Westport Inn and save some jingle jangle as you drink until you're blingle blangle. Kelly's has the best open-air roof in town with beer and drink prices that are cheaper than at the pump. That's for sure. There's plenty of TVs to watch the soccer and the football games this summer. Plus, there's someone for everyone, and you can find him or her at Kelly's. Hearts and smoochies. So check out Kelly's Westport Inn, and you'll have more change to fill up your range, Rover. This has been Ben, Kelly's Westport Ben, saying smell you laters.
Welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We hope you enjoyed our interview there with Neil Morehouse. Like I said, we were trying to get him on earlier. He was having some computer troubles, and like we said, he had a little bit of background going on. But hopefully everything played out okay on there, and we'll get to talk to him for several more weeks as the O's continue their playoff run. Getting back to the Royals, just to kind of summarize what we had talked about before, Moustakas and Hosmer were injured to end the season, but it doesn't look like it's anything that should affect spring training next year. Kind of big news that came out of Royals camp, and it's probably more so spin than anything else, was the Royals actually set a couple of franchise records this season, and they were positive records. I don't know I had a really busy week, and I do apologize because I'm not as prepared as I should be. But as of earlier this week, the Royals had 1,154 strikeouts on the season, which was a new club record, passing the 2009 Royals mark of 1,153 K's. Now, that's not strikeouts by batters, that's strikeouts by pitchers, so that's the good one, not the bad one. In this article that you can see on MLB.com, just one thing that made me laugh was Aaron Crow's response when asked about it. He said, cool. He had 65 K's to contribute. Mike, is there anything that we can take away from the fact that Collins and Holland and Herrera and Coleman and even Guthrie and some of the starters that came out, you know, Danny Duffy, he's real precise, gets a few Ks himself before the injury. Aaron Crow, what can we take away from that number? Is there anything positive to take into the offseason about that?
Well, what I like about strikeouts, and there's different approaches to this, I really feel that if you're a strikeout pitcher, you know, think about what that is. That means you're throwing strikes, but it also means a lot of the times you're missing bats. And anytime somebody strikes out, I think that's a good thing, because when you put the ball in play, you know, it can take a weird hop, it can find a hole, it can drop in. You can make the perfect pitch on a guy, bust it in on his hands, and it'll still bloop over for a single. So if you strike a guy out, there's never been a base hit on a strikeout. And I think that's a kind of good thing to take away. That's how I view it. You know, I don't like the guys. You know, the Twins have a philosophy where they are a pitch-to-contact team. And, you know, I think anytime you can see that you want them to hit the ball, I just don't like it because it opens up that can of worms. What it means for the bullpen specifically, because that's where most of these strikeouts are, or at least bigger kind of proportion of them based on their innings. You know, those are guys that can come in anytime. You can bring in any of those guys, Herrera, Collins, Crow, Coleman, any of those guys. And if you need a strikeout, that's what they're going to be able to get. You know, it could be a situation where you've got one out and runners on second and third. You know, the double play is not in order. You're kind of hoping for a pop-up. Or if you've got one of those guys, you can get a strikeout. And, you know, somebody like Herrera, who has fantastic control, still strikes out 8.2 batters per nine innings, which is very good. And all of these guys had much better control this year, at least, you know, according to their strikeout-to-walk ratios. So I think that's a really good thing to be able to bring those guys in. Now, the starting rotation weren't great, but they weren't bad. It wasn't like, you know, four strikeouts per nine innings or anything. You know, even Bruce Chen was striking out some batters. So as a whole, you know, that's top to bottom a lot of guys who can come in and get a strikeout. 2009, it kind of feels like, you know, that was Zach Greinke's year. Where he won the Cy Young and finished second all-time Royals franchise strikeout record in a single season. And Gilmesh was still pitching as well. So there's a lot of those guys who were kind of involved in that season, and a lot of it came out of the starters, and that's great. You want to see it coming from your starters too. But at least to have the bullpen and those guys who can just – you bring them in and they're locking it down right away. You know, that's a really good weapon, and it's something that if the Royals can go out and find guys who can strike out batters and who can, you know, take care of their business as a starter combined with that bullpen, it could be something really good to see, you know, where next year that record is going to fall again and the next year it's going to fall again. So, you know, it's at least a basis, and maybe it's a little spin just because it's kind of cherry-picking a record, but it's still good, and it still kind of points to a very good strength of the team.
You know, what it finds for me interesting, and I'd love your opinion on this, is in years past, at least the last couple of years, there's been a lot of talk with the Royals about pitch to contact. Is this a new pitching concept coming from the pitching coach change?
I don't think so. I think sometimes you have to fit it to your personnel. I mean, you look at Bruce Chen, he's got, you know, an 88-mile-per-hour fastball. He's not going to blow a lot of people away. So it's if he's not hitting his spots, he's not going to get a lot of strikeouts. You know, the guy with probably the best pure stuff that's on the team, and I use that term specifically, it's Luke Hochaver. You know, he's got a good 95-mile-per-hour fastball, a good slider, his curveball and changeup are all right. And, you know, nothing's ever come together for him, but he still strikes out batters. You know, the pitch to contact thing, the idea behind it is that if you go through a lineup and you're throwing two or three pitches per batter and they hit it to a fielder and you get them out, well, then you're going to be able to get through more innings. You're going to be going deeper into games, finishing more games. The flip side of that, though, is, you know, sometimes they ration what they can do. And, you know, I think some pitchers will hold back. And even if that's not part of the philosophy, I think that's how it ends up being applied. So, you know, like the Twins, where they're going to give up more hits because they're not necessarily going out there trying to miss bats and be dominant. They're going out there, you know, with at least a partial expectation that, okay, well, it's okay if they hit the ball. And to me, like I said, that opens up some trouble because, you know, you can make a perfect pitch and it still can go for a hit. You know, you can try to make a perfect pitch and, you know, it gets crushed. So it's just a weird thing. And, you know, I've talked to Kevin Scobie a lot about this idea, and, you know, his philosophy, and he's convinced me of this as well, is that you want your pitcher to go out there and get outs and prevent runs, period. And you don't, you know, if that means that they only go six innings instead of seven and they still prevent runs, you know, you'd rather have a guy who can get six innings and zero runs allowed than seven and two, you know, because you do have the bullpen and you have guys that you can bring in there. The idea is bring them in and, you know, they throw 15 to 20 pitches, short bursts of activity, and get the outs. And, you know, that's what you're looking for. If somebody wants to swing at the first pitch and ground it to second, fine. But you don't want to go out aiming for that. And I don't think the pitching coach changes or any of that has much to do with it. I think a lot of it's just kind of the personnel that you have. Like, if everybody had a bunch of Justin Verlanders or Steven Strasburgs, they would not be talking about pitch to contact, because you just let those guys go out there and strike out their 10 batters a game and let it be what it's going to be. You know, if you got guys like Bruce Chen, you have to get a little bit of help, and you know, you can't ask him to go out there and strike out 9 batters a game because he's not going to be able to do it.
A couple of things. I'm looking on the baseballreference.com site, because the next thing on our sheet is that the Royals, and it's on the same article from MLB.com, the Royals had another great year in the outfield. Not that anybody's surprised. For what Francoeur was lacking at the bat, he didn't regress the same way in the field, thank God, because then he would have been a complete waste of money. Whereas now he's mostly a waste of money. He made some bad plays, but as far as like the assist numbers and that kind of stuff, he still wasn't somebody that a lot of people were running on. It's amazing this number is this high, because that means that people are still dumb enough to run on these guys. But it's while true. I was looking up this outfield assist number, I found a couple of things that were interesting to me and just some quick hits that I'd like to bring up to you, Mike. I was looking through the leaders here, and one of the things they list is on Baseball Reference is they list errors committed by the positions, and there was 19 errors committed at shortstop this year by shortstop Jesus. Is that surprising to you that Escobar wasn't better than that?
Not really. I mean, think about the shortstop. The shortstop is the position that handles the ball. The only two positions are pretty much like first base and catcher are the only ones that actually handle the ball on the field more often. You know, it's hit to him more often than anybody. So the actual number of errors, it's going to be high sometimes. You know, anytime you field the ball, you've got the opportunity to make the play or make an error. There were some times where he would it almost seemed like he got bored or complacent, like he expected to make the play and would get like a throwing error. So, you know, I think that's something to kind of look at. But it doesn't give me any kind of concern. I mean, we've seen what he can do. And with somebody like him, if he can get to more plays, well, I mean, he's going to get to more errors as well. You know, it's kind of like Unieski Betancourt's fielding percentage would sometimes look okay because he didn't commit a lot of errors. I mean, he still had his share because he's Unieski Betancourt. But, but, you know, it's like, what's the difference? Would you rather have a guy who can get to that ball in the hole and maybe makes an error on it, or the guy who can't even get to it in the first place and it goes for a hit? I mean, it's kind of an unfair standard in some way in the way that it gets scored, just because, you know, you get penalized almost for getting to the ball. And you now, can easily let it go and it goes for a hit and you don't get the error against you.
Sure. On that note, he did tie for second among shortstops with Cabrera out of Asdrubal Cabrera out of Cleveland with 19. Yeah. He was 8 behind Castro for the Cubs, who had 27 errors committed at shortstop and was number one. He was only one ahead of a tie at fourth between Reyes in Miami, Gordon for the Dodgers, and Crawford for the Giants. They all had 18 at shortstop. What's notable about that is they did give him an error on Jeremy Guthrie's near no-hitter. When that was rescored, he did receive an error there, so he would have been tied for third had they not recorded that error. And like you said, maybe there was a couple of plays where they gave him an error where he should have just let the ball win or whatever. I mean, there's a lot of really good defensive numbers on here, numbers that would surprise people. I don't want to get into them all, but putouts at third base. I mean, Moustakas killed it up there, tied for number one.
I think he led in double plays turned by a third baseman as well, which, you know, he gets to the ball, gets a good throw, and they turn it. I mean, yeah, he's been great.
Getting back to the article itself, the conversation that was being had in this article is that the Royals, at the time this article was printed, Had racked up 51 outfield assists on the season. I cannot, again, find the total number for outfielders on this page. I found individuals, but I can't find the total. That matched what they had done last year, and they needed two more to match a franchise record in 1969. I do not – I'm sorry I couldn't find that information and didn't for sure see if they actually got that record or not, but I will find that out before next week if Mike doesn't know.
I don't know.
Gordon has been so fantastic out in the field, and it just it just makes you kind of shake your head that he's been so good. But the number that I found most interesting when I was looking this up just now was if I had to give you an over-under of how many games Alex Gordon played and you were a normal fan, Mike, how many games would you think that Alex Gordon was going to play in 2012 knowing his injury history in the past? How many games do you think Alex Gordon would have got?
I mean, it's not really fair because I'm looking right at what he actually did.
Right.
He's usually had a DL stint or he's had something weird where he gets sent down or whatever. You know, I would think you'd plan for at least one disabled list trip, and so about 140-some.
Which would have put him about third or fourth on this list for most games played by a left fielder. But he actually led the league in games played at left field with 160 games. He had 2 days off the entire year. And that, to me, for a guy that lays out every ball, it seems like, is absolutely impressive. That, combined with his injury history, I think is crazy. He also led in putouts with 319 and led left fielders with assists at 17. I'm going to try to quickly look here. An interesting note, Francoeur did end up having more assists at 19, and that is interesting because there was a stat on this article that said if Francoeur finishes as the league leader, which I believe he did, the Royals will become the first team since 1909-1910 Red Sox to have two different players lead the league in outfield assists in back-to-back seasons. Again, it's kind of an interesting spin stat, but I think it means something too because in years past, how many runners did we see go from like first to third or second to home so easily and just rack up runs on the Royals? And this outfield really keeps people from doing that. An interesting thing figured out by Hal's Hat Crooked, he was one of the commenters on this article, he went through and did the math and he found that the ragtag band of center fielders that the Royals put out there and fourth outfielders or, you know, mystery guys actually racked up enough assists that they would have been third in Major League Baseball as well because they would have been tied with Josh Reddick with 15 and one ahead of Torrey Hunter and Jason Kubel. So I think that's interesting that even the bad outfielders for this team were doing the job, and maybe that was more of a surprise to other teams because they didn't expect the Royals' mystery center fielder to have an arm. And I know Lo Kane looked good when he was healthy for about 6 minutes. He looked good in center field, throwing a few runners out and stuff. Is this something you want to build on, or is this just one of those spin numbers?
It's. I don't think it's anything you can really go for because part of the surprise is that teams were actually still running. You know, I think there was one of those years when Mark Tian was playing in right field. He led the league in outfield assists. But a lot of that was, especially in the first 3 or 4 months, where people were testing him more often. And, you know, if you get those opportunities – you know, that's what's going to happen. You know, sometimes those you're going to get them out. If they hold them at third, you don't get the opportunity for the assist. And that's kind of why it's really surprising that Francoeur and Gordon were so high again, because it's not any secret that you want to run on those guys because they're both very good at throwing runners out. The center field ones, I think a lot of that, I can think of a couple of examples just off the top of my head where somebody made a play on a fly ball and doubled somebody off, and that'll count as an assist. So I don't think it's as often going to be the case where they're throwing somebody out, like they're just gunning them out at third. But I think there's a little bit to it. I mean, it still counts. It's you think about what it takes to get an out after the ball has gotten to the outfield. You know, you've got to hit your cutoff man, and the cutoff man's got to be ready to get to the throw, and everybody's got to be in the right spot. So I don't think it's, you know, if they're making a pitch for people to buy season tickets, I don't think you want to use it because it just doesn't mean that much. But, you know, I think within the game, it still matters. It's just not something that you're going to, you know, you don't set out to lead the league in assists. You just, It's just what happens.
One more thing I want to add that we had down here a little farther on our sheet that I should have mentioned during the pitching part. Another thing that went right for the Royals was pitching was greatly improved in the second half. A lot of that has to do with the getting rid of one virus to this team and adding a man that cared about winning and cared about his teammates. And obviously that's Jonathan Sanchez to Jeremy Guthrie. Better ERA and more innings per start. Mike, what is important about that? Because the next thing we're going to talk about, or I may hold this to the next segment, but there are certain starting pitchers that are coming back. How much can we take away from the second half with the starting pitching?
Well, I think Guthrie obviously was the big thing. I think Will Smith kind of helped as well, because he was able to get through a lot of innings as well as, you know, Bruce Chen kind of rebounded. You know, the big thing is it took a lot of the strain off of the bullpen, because early in the year there were a lot of times where they were pitching five innings out of the game, and, you know, it wears down on those guys. I mean, you know, you can put them through conditioning, but if they're, you know, set up at the beginning of the year to be, you know, short inning relievers to pitch one, maybe two innings, yeah, eventually it does catch up until you can kind of get them the opportunity to stretch out a bit more. So I think that helped to make them more effective. And I think, you know, obviously if the starting pitchers are going deeper, they're probably pitching better. So that helps a lot too. And, you know, Guthrie was a big part of that. I mean, how many games did he go seven or eight innings, you know, versus what Sanchez was doing where he was going four? You know, that's a big shift. And, you know, they're still not good, but it's at least an improvement. And, you know, you saw some improvement there, and that points to Jeremy Guthrie as being, you know, if they were to re-sign him, he's feasibly the opening day starter. Now, hopefully they can sign somebody else. But, yeah, he's been a huge reason for that kind of change in the first half and second half.
And, I mean, I like Jeremy Guthrie a lot. I've liked him on Twitter. We were actually going to try to have him on before. If I would have had my crystal ball working right and could have seen this coming, I definitely would have had him on earlier in the season. I will effort this offseason to get him on through Twitter, though. Effort through Twitter to get him on the show, because I think it'd be interesting to hear, you know, what it was like with all that. So that is definitely something to look forward to. I'm excited that the pitching did do better, but we need some huge upgrades of pitching. Royals do, and we'll see. What we're going to talk about in the next segment is that press conference that was on that the sports stations out here carried, and the takeaways from it, and the discussion that went on, how disgusted I was. But before we get to the negative, let's stay positive for one more kind of meaningless award here, or I guess it depends on who you ask, but Royals reliever Tim Collins wins the award for being best pitcher under 6 foot. No, just kidding. Wins an award called the Mordor Award. It puts him in some interesting company. This award, the Ben Mordor Award, which honors New England's Player of the Year, because Collins is from Worcester, Mass. I can't say East Coast cities.
Worcester.
Leave me alone. Yeah, Worcester, what he says.
It's just Worcester.
Worcester. Right. Well, he's going to receive that award in January of 2013. It's presented by the Baseball Writers of America out of Boston. Their chapter out there. If I could use my words, this would be a much more successful podcast.
Yeah.
The award will be presented at the Boston chapter of the BBWAA at their dinner on January 24th. It puts him in the company of Jeff Bagwell, Mo Vaughn, and Carlos Pena.
Interesting.
So I don't think there's really much to say about that. Neat little award for him. That was from that MLB.com article as well.
Yeah. He did have a really good year. I mean, he struck out 12 batters per 9 innings. At one point, it looked like he was on pace to break the Royals' relief pitcher record for strikeouts, and he kind of wore down a little bit. But, you know, he cut his walks quite a bit from one year to the next. And, you know, I think the Royals used him a little better most of the time. You know, he's a guy – it's really weird because he's left-handed, and the instinct is that he's going to be somebody who's going to be more effective against lefties, and he's really not. It's pretty much even, and maybe even more of an advantage against right-handed batters just because of the way he throws. And he throws fastball changeup more often, and you know, if unless you have a good slider, you're not necessarily going to be that great against same-handed batters, or at least have a sharp, you know, advantage against them. So, you know, but he had a good year. So, you know, winning that award, you know, I'm sure it means something to him. I don't know that it means anything to anybody else. It's just kind of one of those awards that just kind of pop up.
Yeah, it's just, it is what it is. It's nothing too much. Something a little negative here, and this bothered me a lot, probably more than it should have, but two huge things for other teams happened at the K last week. Obviously, I guess the one that I should be excited about, because I always say I want to see baseball history, but I'm talking like a no-hitter or you know, things like that. But Melky Cabrera ended the season at the K, and because
Miguel,
he was ending this
–
that's what I meant. I'm sorry, Miguel Cabrera. Melky Cabrera should have ended his season at the K, but that's a whole different story.
Yeah.
Miguel Cabrera, he won the Triple Crown first time since the 1960s, and it's a great thing. And don't get me wrong, I'm proud for him, but I did say on Twitter that I'm having a lot of trouble getting very excited about that. But because we're a great baseball city, national media, we did stand up and we applauded him, and a lot of people were real excited to see it. Sold over 30,000 tickets to the K. Good part due to it being the final game of the year. Good part of it due to him pretty much guaranteed to win that Triple Crown and that celebration to begin. You know, great year for the Tigers, just like they expected. They had to play a lot harder to get in than we expected, but they did it, and they celebrated in the Kauffman dugouts, and that, to me, literally made me nauseous.
Well, I mean, what are you going to do? I mean, you can't the only way to get around that is to win against them. I mean
– Exactly.
I mean, that's what you got to do. I mean, you can't handle the schedule. They would have been celebrating in Baltimore or Seattle or
– Well, good for them. For them. I don't want it at the K. That's my point. And it's sickening because this team was so much worse than we expected them to be. And by we, I mean you and I and Jeff and people that thought they were going to go 500. And yes, people can say it was only a few games, but it feels like a lot more than a few games when you look back at this year and so many missed opportunities and losing streaks and just poor play. And that was just really kind of like the final knife to the season that had gotten away and everything else that had gone on. And I mean, I think maybe I was at that point just so defeated with the Royals this year, which I talk about a lot in the article that's going up on Kings of Kauffman sometime this week. You know, it's just, it's hard right now to be a Royals fan. I'll never stop. I'll never stop being a Royals fan, but it's hard right now. And that was a real slap in the face. And it was very difficult for me. One last thing before we go to break here. We would like to win some awards of our own. Go to podcastawards.com and vote for the Kansas City Baseball Vault. You can put us into a couple different topics. There's a best of there's a sports topic, and then I'm trying to remember the other one that I was urging people. But if you see two that fit us, put us in there. I think you can only put two. You can use every email address you have, so vote for us any way you can. Get us nominated. We'll probably lose out to ESPN shows, but it would sure be cool to be nominated. And then also Stitcher.com, which we've been partners with for some time now, they're doing their annual awards too, and there is no limit to how many you can vote for there. This one's a little more difficult. I think you can get it off of their front page, which is Stitcher.com, or you can go to Stitcher.promotw.com. That's Stitcher, and then the word promo, and the letters T as in Tom, W as in worry.com. And you can vote for us. If you start typing the name of the show, it should fill it in because they have their field set up to database every show, and we are listed under Kansas City Baseball Vault, which is interesting because I never changed it to Stitcher, but they obviously get their updates off of our feeds. And you can vote for us in every single category. Please, please, please do so. I think this one's actually based on IP address, so if you can get to it from a work computer and a home computer, please do so. We really appreciate – oh, actually, I think I may take that back. You may have to like the page, so it may be based off of Facebook accounts. Well, either way, please go out and vote for us. That's an award set that I think we can win, and I think we could win several off of Stitcher. But go out and vote for the Kansas City Baseball Vault because you like us and we try hard. So we're like the Royals. We try hard. On that note, we're going to be right back to do our final segment because we're going a little longer than I had intended today. We're going to talk about the press conference that the Royals held that was another thing that made me hurl. So we'll be right back on the other side.
The Kansas City Baseball Vault will be right back after these messages.
Brand new Royal Stadium in Kansas City's Harry S. Truman Sports Complex is the attractive setting for this year's game. Hosting this all-star occasion are Mr. and Mrs. Ewing Kauffman. And with a stadium record crowd of almost 41,000 streaming in, everything certainly is up to date in Kansas City.
The Vault.
Come to Spit Cup this week. We'll let the person who has the highest bar tab ride the bull. We don't have any TVs in our bar, but we make our own entertainment. Mondays, it's free cover charge to anybody with a gun rack in their pickup truck. Tuesdays, we've got $8 beer night. All domestic beers are on special for only $8. It's Spit Cup. Wednesdays is longest tobacco spit. Thursdays is foot fungus night. Friday night is Jamboree night. Bring your crap kick in your 10-gallon hats. And this weekend, you get our world-famous Spit Cup girls. You get to pick which one has the most teeth. It's Spit Cup. Talking to the wall.
Or you could go to Kelly's Westport Inn. The highest quality drinks with the lowest prices. You know what we do. Drinks, friends, plenty of TV showing sports. They've got all the basketball and all the baseball on. Live music on the weekends. The best pizza in Kansas City and fun. Kelly's has the best rooftop patio in town and is voted one of the best places in Kansas City to check out the view, if you know what I mean, and maybe make a new friend. Make the best choice for your evening entertainment. Kelly's Westport Inn. Kelly's is at 500 Westport Road in Kansas City, Missouri. Kelly's Westport Inn. Tell them the Royal Man Report sent you.
Hey folks, Troy Olson here from the Kansas City Baseball Vault, and we've got something a little special for you today. We had a chance to sit down and talk with Brad Cook of Out of the Park Baseball, or you may know it as OOTP. Probably the best baseball product, best simulator that's out there. I know that would definitely be Brad's opinion on it. Brad, tell us a little bit of what you do for Out of the Park.
Well, I'm the PR marketing coordinator, so I basically work with the media, talk to people like yourself, get reviews published, work on events, you know, like the Laundry League we're doing with Seamheads right now, things like that. Just kind of try to get the word out there about the game, and you know, increase our sales and get more people playing it.
Well, I just recently stumbled across it in the last couple of years, and I've really, really enjoyed the older versions that I have. I haven't had a chance to dig into 2013 yet. Of course, the newest product is OOTP 2013, available now for, let's see, you have it for Windows, Mac. Is there a Linux version as well, yeah, or is it just...
And Linux, it's actually version 13. Some people make that mistake. It's actually I know with Madden and the other sports games they do go a year ahead. So it's just Out of the Park Baseball 13.
Good, thank you for that correction. Sorry about that.
No problem. It's not a huge deal. It's just sometimes people do it. I just wanted to be clear in case someone looks for the game and, you know, is unsure with what they're looking at. So
yeah, and you know, and that just shows you how much that EA and all the others have conditioned us to a way of thinking. So
exactly.
So 13 versions now. Have you been around for all of those, or are you somewhat newer to the program?
I'm pretty new. I started in January 2011. So I took over from Steve Battisti, my predecessor, who did the job. So now I'm kind of stepping into it after it's had a lot of time to mature and kind of, you know, kind of develop a core, you know, user base.
Well, I know that it's real popular among my group. Of course, I'm a baseball podcaster, so I suppose that makes me a baseball geek, and at least a little bit. And I know that one of our guys that goes by Royals Heritage, he plays the game, and I believe that he was recreating the old Kansas City A's and working through and doing some write-ups and stuff on the game of the seasons based off of the game. And I know I want to go back through and try to rewrite history a little bit with the Kansas City Royals and see some different things that can happen. And that's just one of the neat things that's about the game. Kind of tell people that may not be familiar with Out of the Park about what you can do with the game and why it's so popular.
Well, you know, I like to describe it as a world builder. You know, it pretty much you set up a game, and what you set in motion when you get the game going is basically a whole world. So you take over your team, and there's this artificial intelligence that drives the behaviors of the players and the general managers who run the other teams. And if you're playing solo, it's a computer running everything. And basically, you can do everything, just about everything you do in real life in baseball. So you're drafting players, you're feeding guys into your minor league system. There's, you know, full minor leagues. You can move guys up and down through the system. You've got scouts. You can, you know, set hire and fire scouts and set scouting budgets and tell them where to look for prospects. You can hire and fire your coaches and your manager, and you can trade players, negotiate contracts, set your lineup, set your pitching rotation, set your strategies. When it's game time, you can play out the games, decide you want to steal, pinch hit, pinch run, you know, keep your pitcher in, pull him out. You can sim through the games if you want, if you'd rather just kind of be more of a general manager and kind of do kind of the front office function. So, I mean, it's kind of like stepping in the shoes of, you know, just running your baseball team and doing everything they do in real life.
Now, and the game is very deep. It's not, like you said, it's got the full minor league systems, but even more so, it has rosters for how many different years and different leagues in there?
Yeah, I mean, I haven't even gotten into that. Yeah, there's a whole, you can go all the way back to 1871 and play forward. All the real players are in it, so you could take over a team, you know, if you want to go back in time, take over the Red Sox and not get rid of Babe Ruth, you know, you can do that and see what would have happened and run the team from there. Players enter the league when they were supposed to. There's also an option you can choose where you can say, you know what, let's let guys enter the draft. So a guy like Mickey Mantle will, instead of going to the Yankees when he appears, he'll enter the draft and you could draft him to, you know, whatever team you're running. You can also, I just want to mention, you've got one thing we added this year was this random historical debut feature. So if you turn that on, guys will randomly show up throughout history. So Albert Pujols could show up in the 1920s. Sandy Koufax could show up today, which is kind of a fun way of doing things.
I know that we had talked about this in a Twitter chat. I believe it was you and I. But I don't know. I thought you had said something about it possibly being added this year. But like I said, I haven't had time to dig into the game yet. I know it's real popular. The Negro League Museum is real popular here in Kansas City. Has there been have the Negro Leagues been added to the game yet?
Not yet. That's a good question.
I know it's something that Out of the Park had been looking into or working on. So it's definitely an aspect, because the reason I bring that up is because it's not just Major League Baseball that's in the game. There right. are some of the old historical leagues as well.
Yeah. I know someone, I know the Federal League, is something someone created and put in there. I mean, yeah, because there's, you know, it's customizable, so there's a lot you can do with the game. There's a lot you can put in it. And I know I should know if the Negro Leagues are in there or not. I can't remember. We've got something called Add-on Central in the game, so you can go through that and you can import leagues that people have created that are available for download.
So not only the great work that Out of the Park's doing, but you also have this community that's feeding into this game to make it an even bigger, deeper game.
Right, yeah, exactly. And there's a lot of customization. There are people, and you can also create fictional leagues. So there are people who like to create fictional leagues that just have, you know, cities and team names that are their own creation, and players, you know, the game will just randomly generate fictional players who get drafted, some people like to set up a fictional league and then sim it for like 10 years in commissioner mode, which just kind of matures it and creates a history, and then they take over a team and kind of guide it from there.
Now there's I saw that there is a sale going on with the Apple products. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so we've got a mobile version of the game for iOS. It's IOTP Baseball 2012 is the new version. That's in the App Store. It's normally $5. It's $1 So 99 cents this weekend. And so, yeah, that's kind of a more casual version of the game. It doesn't have the full minor leagues. I mean, there are limitations with the hardware, so we can't do everything. But it's good for more, you know, kind of casual simming on the go.
That was actually what I was going to ask you, is what you how different it was than the actual computer version, but you kind of set that up. And the weekend he is referring to is the weekend of 10-6. Does that run through Columbus Day, or is it ending on Monday morning?
It's ending Sunday night.
Sunday night, okay. So folks will want to get right on that, and we'll put that out on Twitter too, since it takes me a minute to get the podcast out in case people don't see this right away. Let me see, what else? Oh, I was mentioning that it's very popular among my circle. It's so popular that my co-host Mike Engel sent an email, said that I had been talking to you guys and was going to do something with you. And he said, well, if copies of the game are coming out of this deal, I need to clear out my whole week because I'm way too busy for the amount of time that I'm going to need to yeah. sit down and play this. Is that a reaction you get from a lot of people?
Yeah. It's a pretty common reaction. You know, I'm getting the game and I'm going to take a couple days off from work. Things like that. So certainly when a new version's around the corner, there are a lot of comments like that. Some people compare it to Christmas when we're about to release the new version. So, yeah, there's certainly a lot of that. And, of course, I also see some people say, boy, I don't even want to touch this because I'll get lost in it and my spouse will be upset or, you know, I'll lose my job or something, which I guess is a double-edged sword. But, yeah, I hear that sometimes.
Well, is there anything else that we need to know about the game or anything that's coming up with it?
No, we just put out a recent update. We put out several updates a year, so we've got we always tweak some things, add some things. Both games get updates, so the iOS game just got the second wild card for each league added in the latest update. The computer version of the game has had. Has had that obviously since the beginning of the year. So yeah, I mean, it's just pretty much just about anything you want to do in baseball in terms of running a team. You know, you can do that in the game.
Well, like you said, OTP version 13 is available right now. Give out your website so that I don't get it wrong.
It's OOTPdevelopments.com.
OOTPdevelopments.com. It's where you can go pick up the game. I believe it's $49.99 right now, correct?
$39.99 right now. Yeah, we had a 50% off sale not too long ago, and it's $39.99 right now.
Yeah, so it's a great price, $39.99. It's like we've said, it's something that's going to just engulf you. It's, if you love baseball, if you love like the behind the scenes of being able to run a team and going back in time and running that team from you know the 60s and 70s, you know, thinking about what if Jermaine Dye had never left the Royals? What if Carlos Beltran had been here in his good years? What if, what if all this could happen? And then if there's players that, you know, maybe you're an overachiever and you want to see what it'd be like for the Negro League players to enter baseball earlier than they did, you can go in, create those players, share them with your friends, and have all sorts of different reality to baseball, and especially as a Royals fan, I know we have to live in a fantasy land if we want to think about our team in a positive way. So I want to thank you, Brad, for taking the time to come on with us today and talk a little bit about Out of the Park. We're always glad to get the word out on great baseball products like this.
Thanks. Yeah, thanks for having me on.
And welcome back into the Kansas City Baseball Vault. One final segment here today. Of course, I'm Troy Olson, joined by Michael Engel. Hey, one quick thing. I should get this up later today, that today being Saturday, October 6th. I am going to be out at Kelly's tomorrow night about 7 p.m. to celebrate my birthday. My birthday's Monday. And there's a lot going on tonight with roller derby and some other stuff. Somebody else's birthday, and I didn't want to crash their birthday party. But I'm just doing a little low-key drinking thing. So if you want to come out to our sponsor, Kelly's Westport Inn, have a couple of beers with me, I'd love to see you. Say hi. We could have a good time. So the Royals held their season-ending press conference. It was carried on 610 and 810, and it was pretty disgusting overall. It's absolutely amazing how out of touch this team seems to be. Things we learned, that Luke Hochhaver is coming back. Interesting note on that is he's arbitration eligible this year. So the Royals have never went to arbitration with a player under Dayton Moore.
Nope.
So does that mean that they're going to sign Hochhaver for multiple years?
No. Here's how the arbitration process works. There's a certain deadline, and I'm not sure where it is. It's relative to the there's a certain date, and you have to offer a contract at that point. And at that point, once you've offered the contract, you know, the player, you've got the rights to the player, then the player and the team, they exchange figures of what the player thinks that they should get for the next season and what the team thinks they should pay for the next season. And most of the time, teams come to an agreement somewhere in the middle. Like, you'll see that they agree to terms. And it's usually just a one-year contract for that particular that particular arbitration period. It's really rare. There's maybe four a year among all of Major League Baseball of cases that actually go to an arbitration panel where they have to decide. So, you know, the Royals have never gotten to that point. They've always come to an agreement on a salary, but it's almost always for that particular year. So it's not necessary that they have to come to an agreement on a long-term contract. It's just that they're coming to an agreement on what the salary will be for next year. So, but the sound of it is that they want to bring Luke Hochhaver back. And, you know, I think that's a mistake. I think that's just completely wrong.
But you can't give up on him, Mike. That's what Dayton Moore tells us. You can't give up on him because he'll just give up on life.
Well, that's not my problem. I mean, he's not a good pitcher. And the more the Royals think that he's going to be a good pitcher, the more it kind of shows where they're just not able to evaluate pitchers and players at the major league level. It's really scary. You know, it's so weird. It's like, I don't understand how this organization can look at a player like Luke Hochhaver, who has year after year of awful seasons, and they want to stick with him. You know, same thing with Kyle Davies. But they look at somebody like, I don't know, Johnny Giovitella, who's pretty much getting, you know, there's no opportunity at all to be the everyday second baseman. And after two-thirds of his season, you know, they've determined that, yeah, he's not going to ever develop. I mean, it's like, if you can wait out a guy on one side, why can't you do it on the other? I mean, at least be consistent. It's just so confusing, the battles that they choose to fight. And the ones
Could that be because he's an offensive player and they have other options at second base, whereas with pitchers, there's not any options on this team? Like, one thing that Danny Parkins kept bringing up is there five better starting pitchers on this team right now than Luke Hochhaver?
Yeah.
Is there five? Do you think so?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You can put I think Everett Tiefert could do better over a full season than Luke Hochhaver, based on what Luke Hochhaver has done. Bruce Chen could do better. Jeremy Guthrie could do better. Will Smith could do better. Jake Odorizzi could probably do just as well and has more opportunity to develop. Plus, you've got guys that you could bring up. I mean, I am just done with Hochhaver. I mean, what else does he have to show me? I mean, he, for all the talk about what he was turning around last year, he came out and he still had a worse ERA. His ERA was bad coming into this year, and it's gone up. So I don't know what else to do with him. And the Royals, they've tried everything. They've tried, let's give him a different release. Let's have him use different pitches. Let's have him use different pitches again. Let's have him use different sequence. You know, let's have him move here. Let's have him do there. They've done everything they could to turn him around, and it's not happening. You know, maybe he needs a change of scenery. Maybe he just needs a different organization. But, man, it can't be the Royals. I mean, he's not going to do it in Kansas City. He's 29. If he can't figure out how to pitch after 5 years in the big leagues at 29, when's he going to learn it?
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out for at least another year because they're sold on him. So something that so I thought was interesting after that, if you listen to 610, Danny Parkins talked about 106 times this season they trotted out a starting pitcher that had an ERA of 4.99 or higher. That's 65% of the season. You had a starting pitcher that you expected to give up five runs over nine innings.
That's awful.
That can't happen next year.
No, it can't. And it goes back to Hochhaver, but if they're going to settle for Hoetschaver, then what are they going to call the big move of the offseason? I mean, I like Jeremy Guthrie, and he did very well, but, I mean, it's just as possible that he could regress next year. It's just as possible that that's all they do is go get Jeremy Guthrie and re-sign him. You know, last year they talked so much about how, you know, they didn't want to sign a guy just because it would block their prospects, and all of those prospects stayed in the minors. You know, they avoided going after starting pitching last year because they didn't want to block guys that they never called up. You know, and some of that's on Mike Montgomery and Chris Dwyer, and John Lamb was hurt. But, you know, they could have called Jake Odorizzi up in June or July. They could have done that. You know, they had plenty of guys that they could have brought up that would have been better than Jonathan Sanchez for the longest time, and they didn't do it. And it's just so weird that they're willing to stick with guys that just, you know, aren't able to do it. And that's the reason that they give, too. I mean, they could have went out and signed somebody. You know, I have no doubt that they could have at least convinced one guy to come to Kansas City, even if some of the guys struck out on. It's just such a weird organization right now.
A quick bump on this. We're recording, like I said, about quarter after one on Saturday, and KU, K-State's on. If you're not paying attention, Mike, K-State's up 28-14, but KU was driving. They were down within the five-yard line, and Chris throws a pick at the two.
Of course he does.
So K-State's got the ball, and they're going the other direction.
Nice.
In other news, getting back to baseball, I don't know. I think they're going to go out and get somebody else along with Guthrie, but I think so your starting rotation next year will be somebody, Jeremy Guthrie, Chen, Hoetschaver, and either Odorizzi or Will Smith. Is there any way that that team has an ERA 65% of the time below 5? Can Will Smith what he did?
I think Will Smith could be an average starter. I mean, he's not a guy you're going to ever ask to be your number three. But I think he could be a guy who could be right there at about 4.5 on the ERA, maybe a little higher, which is around average. There's also Luis Mendoza. I mean, they'll have him as well. You know, so that's another guy. You know, I still don't believe on him, but that's a whole other story. I don't know. I mean, I think they could be better, and it depends on who you sign. If they get Guthrie back, I think he'll be better. Chen, I'm not sure. Chen's kind of iffy. I think they'll be better than what they did this year, though. It's such a wasteland of pitching right now. We have a lot of the guys who could be very good number four guys, number five guys on a good staff, but we don't have anybody who'd be much more than a three. I mean, Guthrie has been a number one for that team for Baltimore. You know, he's been their opening day starter a few years. And, you know, I think he could be effective, but, you know, it's just not enough. I don't think you can ever have enough good pitching, and I think they should go out and look for more good pitching.
Well, and I think there's going to be some of that, and I totally had forgotten about Mendoza. I carried that Mendoza flag early in the year, and I totally spaced him off. But, yeah, he'll be back too. So there's another guy to throw into the mix. Yeah. So a lot of, like you said, a lot of 3, 4, 5 pitchers on this team, no ones and twos, and that's the difference between – having a good team or not. So we'll see what happens with that. But while Hoetschaver is not part of the problem, apparently Kevin Seitzer is. Yes, Hosmer had a horrible year offensively, but we've seen improvements from Gordon and Escobar and Moustakas. And so there's a lot of improvements there, but apparently there was philosophy differences or something going on, and they don't renew Kevin Seitzer, and he's out. Royals legend Kevin Seitzer out of the organization. Frank White's waiting for you on the bench over there, Kevin. It's a little bit disgusting that they kind of put this on him as the scapegoat.
Well, I mean, I wouldn't even say it's a scapegoat. I mean, the two most important players right now are Mike Moustakas and Eric Hosmer. Billy Butler and Alex Gordon are going to do their thing. They're, you know, they've been in the big leagues long enough to have figured it out. They've been guys who have been able to, you know, they work their asses off. Alex Gordon is notorious for being the hardest worker on the team. And these are both, you know, former first-round picks. So it's not like Kevin Seitzer took guys who were, you know, 10th rounders and turned them into potential all-stars. You know, he took guys who had actual talent and, you know, made a slight adjustment with Gordon, did a lot of work with him, and he should get credit for that. But I think a lot of that is more on Gordon and Butler than it is on who the coach is. This happens all the time in sports, especially where a player makes a change and, you know, they don't get as much credit as I think the player deserves sometimes.
Well, one thing that you and you noted on here, that on Twitter at DBLesky and at Double Sticks, that's STIX, we're talking about was that it may be Terry Bradshaw. No, not that Terry Bradshaw, but
right.
The one that's in the one that's in Double A. He worked with all the big bats, Hosmer, Moustakas, Myers. He's worked with them before. Mm. What do you know about him? Anything?
I don't know a lot about him other than he's been in the organization for a long time. He's been a lower level, like a rookie level hitting coach. He's been in Double A for, I think, about 4 years now. He's been in Triple A as a hitting instructor. I think he might have even been in Triple A when Alex Gordon was coming up or at some point. But I don't know a lot about him, but it is something that he has worked with those guys before. And, you know, when you look at Hosmer and Moustakas when they went from Wilmington to Double A, that's when their breakout started. You know, they both had pretty rough years at High A in the Carolina League, which it's a pitching league. It's a pitching and defense league. But, you know, they got to Double A, and they both kind of put themselves back on the prospect map. Will Myers had a pretty good year in Double A or in High A in Wilmington before he was promoted last year in the middle of the year, and then this year, you know, broke out and was minor league player of the year. So it kind of seems like he's probably the favorite. The Royals said that they want to promote from within. I think that really kind of points to Terry Bradshaw being the guy. So part of that might even be this change in philosophy that you mentioned. And Seitzer was on 810 and mentioned that Ned Yost came to him back in August and said that he wanted to see players pull the ball more. And, you know, you pull the ball more, you usually get more power. Sometimes you can strike out more, but, you know, you get more power. And that might be the direction that they're going, where they want to see some of these guys, you know, hit the ball into right field rather than, you know, take it the other way sometimes. And, you know, I need to see if I can track down some interviews with Bradshaw to see if that's kind of what his philosophy is and if that's kind of what it points to. But, you know, I think a season like this where there are expectations, you know, Ned Yost is under contract for next year. He wasn't going to go. Dave Island just came in. He wasn't going to go. You know, they got to point to somebody. And if they don't point to a Seitzer, it's, you know, Dayton Moore's got to be the one with the finger. And, you know, he should be. You know, maybe Seitzer would have been able to stay and be okay, but, you know, I don't know. Sometimes you just got to make a change.
I've got a finger for both Ned and Dayton Moore personally at this point. So, you know, I think it's about time to wrap this up today. We've kind of went on for a while. We've talked about who's coming and going kind of the last couple weeks. I think we'll start to find that out in the next few weeks. When's the Rule 5 draft, Mike?
Rule 5 draft will be in the middle of December. It's during the owners' meetings. So the Royals will have to I don't think the date's ever the same, but they have to determine who's going to be in the 40-man by a certain date. And then, you know, the Rule 5 draft will happen, and then, you know, you can still shuffle from there. So I think once the World Series is over, they'll have to come to some decisions on who they're going to offer arbitration to. You know, if they're going to exercise options. I mean, Billy Butler's got an option. That's going to be exercised, obviously. Joaquin Soria is an interesting one. They're not going to exercise his option, I'm 99% sure, because they'd be paying him $8 million with no idea of what he can do. But they can still buy it out for $750,000. And both sides have said that they want to continue to work together. So I think they'll probably renegotiate. Which is good because Soria just started throwing again after Tommy John surgery. So that's something to kind of look at and see what they do with him. And I think he'll stick. I think they'll probably do some kind of really incentive-laden thing where if he pitches X amount of innings in 2013, an option will automatically vest for 2014 or something like that, probably at a reduced salary than what he would have gotten. But you know, still more than, you know, league minimum or minor league contract or something like that.
It's important to note that this is his second Tommy John surgery. People have come back from two, but they've seemed to be less effective and kind of a different player. So it'll be interesting to see if he comes back. And if he comes back, then one of the biggest controversies we'll have in spring training is who's going to close, because, Holland looked good to end the year. So
I don't know if that's going to be a controversy, because I think what they can do with Soria, and I wrote a little bit on this at Kings of Kauffman, and I think Kevin Scobie is going to follow up because it was pretty much his idea and I just kind of ran with it. But now might be the perfect time to bring Soria back as a starter, because part of the training process is to build up arm strength, and he's basically starting from scratch. So they can rebuild him in whatever mode they want to. Whereas before, he would always come into spring training with an eye towards being the closer, so they would train him that way. And, I think maybe that's an opportunity that they have to kind of take a look at him that way. And it's also something of a luxury because they have Holland, and they have Kelvin Herrera, and guys who could easily be the closer. And even if something didn't go right, they could always move Soria back to the bullpen, but it's a lot harder to move somebody from the bullpen to the starting rotation, especially in the middle of the year. So that could be something that they try, and I think that's a really interesting case for the offseason is what they end up doing with them.
Royals fans, always looking forward to the interesting stories in spring training.
Yes.
One note for me, and this is just personal opinion. I have no reason to believe this, and I don't want to turn it into a long conversation because we don't agree on this subject anyways, but I kind of think Herrera is going to be one of those guys that doesn't have the closer mentality. He could be a very awesome setup guy, but I don't ever see him closing for this team. I don't think he's built right, so.
100-mile-per-hour fastball and the best changeup in the American League is going to play in the eighth or ninth inning. It doesn't make a difference, but you're right.
Well,
we're not going to agree on that.
I think it's going to be the eighth, and that's fine. That's great. I mean, setup men are very valuable, and they make a lot of money. Yeah. They don't make as much as closers. But, you know, Jeremy Jeffers, if he could have ever got it right, man, I don't think he's going to get another chance. So I think he's going to be the one piece of the Greinke trade that was so important to make sure that trade got done, and I think he's going to be cut at the end of this year. But that's a story for December, and we'll definitely cover that if they send him on his way in December. But I think on that note, you know, just keep your chin up, Royals fans. It's hard right now.
Buck up.
Buck up, guys. It's a hard life to live, but it makes you stronger. So. For Michael Engel of kingsofkauffman.com, go out to Kings of Kauffman, check out all this stuff. There should be a piece up from me sometime this week. I detailed out hanging up the costume and why I thanked a lot of people. And if I missed you, it wasn't personal. I honestly went back and added people twice that I had intended to and didn't. So it's hard. It's already over 1,500 words, so it's plenty long. And I'm not a very good writer, so I'm sure Mike's got a lot of work to do on it. So until next week, for Michael Engel and for Neil Morehouse and the Orioles, I'm Troy Olson. This has been the Kansas City Baseball Vault. We'll see you next week. Go Royals.